It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so now we're making sounds. All right. So there's a box that we had that had apples in it.
Okay.
And the lid of it box of that apple box is just a cardboard lid.
Mm-hmm.
But like. Self, this completely detached lid, like it's one you just like put on,
okay, pick up, sure, kind of thing,
and it has little holes in it,
sure,
about like nickel sized or whatever,
okay,
couple on each short side and then like two on each long side. At some point, it ended up in a spot over here where Addie likes to sometimes lay,
okay,
that's right at good height to like reach out and pet him and stuff. So he ended up in that. So we've now developed a process where we've invented a new game that we call Apple Box, or sometimes Apple Dumpling Gang. And these are also now two nicknames we give him, where you just stick your finger in one of the holes and he tries to get it, and then you go to the other one and he tries to get it. But the thing is, he sucks at this game.
Oh.
He cheats.
Cheats?
With me, constantly. Like, I stick my finger in the thing and he just reaches his whole arm over and just like grabs my hand. And I'm like... Not only is that cheating by the rules of the game, but if that's what... Why are we even playing? Like, why is this interesting to you if like, you're clearly like, I can see your hand, and I'm not going to pretend I can't see your hand. I'm just going... I'm like, I could do that with anything. I could just,
sure,
put
you don't
my
need
hand
box
out there. Yeah. But he loves it. To the point now that, like, I get up in the morning to go to the gym, and I'm walking down the hall, and if he's like, been in the bed or whatever, he runs so he can jump in the box before I get out there.
Just so we can cheat.
Exactly, right? It's very strange. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that has a very exclusive list of who can listen to it. And you, yes, you, are on that list. Congratulations. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 445.
445. Again, feels like it should be a number of some sort of significance. Don't believe it is.
Maybe it is to somebody.
I mean, yeah, probably. Did I ever tell you that I learned this from QI? The world's least favorite number is 110.
And why is that?
Somebody decided they wanted to find out what the most popular number was. And so they did a big survey where they asked everyone their lucky number or their favorite number.
Mm.
110 was the lowest number that no one picked.
Hmm. Nobody.
Nobody. Also, the favorite number, probably unsurprising, 7. The most people picked 7.
Why is that not surprising?
7's a very common lucky number. 7 and 3, I think, are very big lucky numbers.
Hmm.
A lot of people have them.
Why do you think that is? Just some weird...
I think there's a prime number aspect to it. Hmm. But I don't really know. Other people might. Speaking of which, last week... Sorry, I should probably explain the show first. hello, everyone. Welcome to the... Wait, I already did that part. Let me explain the show. For those of you just listening for the first time, I'm not going to apologize. This is as good as it gets, honestly. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, good people who need to help us out now. I'm calling on you now. I just can sense telepathically the hat's email account is empty.
This is our fall question
Need
drive.
Help. Anyway, people who are going to help out, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. And the hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its imploring servants, draw the note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them to our board, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. So if you love shows like The Magical Talking Hat and so many others, then pledge your questions now. Call us up at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com.
Have you ever been driving while you're listening to The Magical Talking Hat, and then you pull into the driveway, but instead of just shutting the car off, you continue to listen because you just can't wait to hear how the rest of the show goes.
For those
driveway moments.
Love those great Magical Talking Hat hosts and correspondents like Terry Gross and Nina Totenberg.
Yeah.
Cokie Roberts, R.I.P.
That was sad, wasn't it?
It was sad.
Yep. Gonna miss her.
Also, rough time for 80s pop music. We lost Rick Ocasek and Eddie Money.
I hadn't heard about Eddie Money.
Yeah, and I feel old because, I mean, some of my coworkers knew what I was talking about, but some of them were like, I don't know who that is.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm like, that's a decade issue there.
A decade issue.
Because, like, I'm not... I wasn't exactly... Like, I didn't exactly have posters of them on the wall. I didn't own any albums or anything. But, like, I knew...
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
I knew My Best Friend's Girlfriend. I knew Take Me Home Tonight. I knew Two Tickets to Paradise. I mean, how can you not know this stuff? And the answer is, be born in the 90s. Anyway, so last week we were unable to do the thing and the evil universe stepped in.
Yeah.
And I hate when this happens. Well, I mean, it's fun too, but it's very difficult. So people got really active on the blog about that episode.
Yeah.
Which is a problem because we didn't do the episode and I don't listen to the podcast, so that I don't even know what they're talking about, so they don't give enough context, and I don't know. And even if somehow the whole thing was a scam and we really do those episodes, we would have done them a long time ago in preparation for an absence, and I would have forgotten what was on them. So, but that's not what's... I mean, we didn't even do them in the first place. And you're probably fine. I figured you'd jump in there with stuff, but you didn't do it because you listened to the episodes.
I let Evil William do it now, ever since he started.
Well, he didn't jump in either. Nobody was responding this week. Well, let's make our listeners sad.
I did listen to it.
All twos of them.
Maybe I should say something, but...
Because I'm reading these comments, and I'm like, I'm not sure what this is about.
I understood them, but that's because I listened to it. I like to know what those guys are up to.
Not me.
No good. It's never any good.
Well, yeah.
They're so bad.
That's how it works, I guess.
I mean, Evil William takes pennies and doesn't leave them. That's unconscionable. I don't understand how he lives with himself.
So how have your 2 weeks been?
Okay, so we saw It Chapter 2.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see it?
No, I didn't even see It Chapter 1.
It Chapter 1 was very popular.
I thought you liked it a fair bit.
It was fine. It Chapter 2...
It's more popular, it seems.
Is it? Oh, I thought it was.
I don't know that
well.
It's making as much money. It is critically being received better. Oh, okay. And it is still doing very well.
Okay, well, I thought they both were on par as far as quality. Here's the thing. I don't know how to describe this particular subgenre of horror where there's a monster and people are trying to get away from it, the whole thing kind of like Nightmare on Elm Street, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
somewhere between a slasher and a creature feature.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Somewhere between.
I'm not sure if there's a
it's not
specific subgenre for that, but there should be. It's a thing.
It is a thing. And it's not really
I think it's often just considered as a supernatural version of a slasher, I guess, but
oh, okay. Well, it's not usually my kind of thing. But these two films, I thought, were pretty skillfully made. And my wife had been a fan of Stephen King, so you know, sometimes we'll watch Stephen King things. I don't know. I haven't read Stephen King, but I don't know how easy it is to adapt his stuff to film.
I do know almost all. I have not read any Stephen King either. Almost all of the films I have seen based on Stephen King materials, I have not liked.
Well, I think that's true for most people.
And I think a lot of them have not been well received. I don't know how that translates or not.
Well, like, I like The Shining, but as I understand it, Kubrick took a lot of liberties.
Yeah.
Now, I have read H.P. Lovecraft, and I've often thought when I'm reading it that there's... The literary aspects of it are so important and strong. It's hard for me to imagine even making something based on Lovecraft that's going to work in film.
Yeah. When people say things are Lovecraftian, frequently they're just stupid and they just mean something with tentacles. But more, if they're being intelligent about it, they mean something with the concept. They mean cosmic horror.
Sure.
Essentially. And there aren't a lot of legit adaptations of specific Lovecraft works out there. And the ones that are out there tend to be... We took a couple of names and we ran with it, but it's not really that related. Or there are a couple of stories that lend themselves more directly to that because they have more plots that are active. Dunwich Horror comes up a lot.
Well, I wonder if Stephen King has a similar problem, because whenever people talk about it in the books and they're talking about things in the books that aren't in the movies.
Yes.
They're all things that when I hear about them, I think I can totally imagine that being interesting and even eerie and unnerving in a literary context. But even you describing it in an article, in a news article, it sounds so dumb.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So maybe he suffers a little bit the same way that Lovecraft does, in that it totally works in a book with certain atmosphere and certain descriptions, and you're talking about the person experiencing it and what they're feeling. But when you film it, you know, it doesn't work.
I have no interest in reading any Stephen King. I used to have an interest in reading the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
And eventually, first of all, it wasn't finishing, and then eventually it did, and I'm like, oh, it's like a billion pages. And there's like 3 million pages in the middle that don't have anything to do with the plot. And I'm like, I don't think I can handle this. And other than that, I've never had an urge to read Stephen King, except I have never read any Stephen King, and I kind of want to read some to see what the fuss is about.
Yeah.
Because he makes competent stories. Like, I've read a lot of the stuff on Wikipedia and things like that, sure. And I've seen some movies. And there's competent stories, but not superlative genius stuff.
That's right.
And I have been led to believe also that it is not even so much what he writes, but how he writes.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
So sometimes I have the urge to do that, but it hasn't been enough to actually.
But that just feeds into what I'm saying. That if really, another thing I've picked up from people who like Stephen King is, I'll talk to one person who likes his work and another person who likes his work. Now they'll both agree that, like what you just said, it's how he says it.
Yeah.
But they'll also mention themes that resonate with them, but they're completely different things. And I start to get the impression that what a lot of Stephen King fans like, most of what they like is what they bring to it themselves.
Yeah. Well, but you also have a body of work that is enormous and over many decades.
Yeah.
So it's possible that it varies a great
deal. Yeah, that's true.
And he seems to really love turning them into TV and movies. They're doing it all the time. He frequently wrote screenplays for them. I will say, the one that wasn't a book first and was a movie, Sleepwalkers, is a steaming pile of garbage. And he wrote that screenplay, and there was no book before, and that thing is terrible.
One of my favorite things in It Chapter 2 is the scene that Stephen King is in.
Mm.
He nails it. He's just fantastic. I never would have guessed that.
He's acted for a long time now, having been in all of his movies.
Well, I haven't seen a lot of his movies. And I understand he's had cameos, but this was a scene. He was in this scene. He was acting. He had
because yeah, no, he has cameos in like every.
It was pretty long scene, and it was he was really good at it, really effective. It was a little bit comedic, and I really liked it, and I was really impressed. But yeah, it was okay. I don't know. I mean, if you're already inclined to see it, I would recommend seeing
which
it in the theater. If you're not, I don't. You can probably skip it. But we also saw a movie called Willow Creek, written and directed by Bobcat. What's his name?
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah, him.
Yes.
Have you seen this?
I have not.
I've
been curious but hesitant to approach some of his stuff, especially his sort of more horrific stuff.
Well, why is that?
Comedy and horror for me, it can be a very good combination, but it's a very tricky combination. And Bobcat Goldthwait always seems to be riding this weird line. He had that sort of anthology show recently, and I watched some of that, and I'm like, I don't know.
Well, I didn't. I mean,
I run very hot and cold on him in general.
This film didn't. I mean, it like a lot of horror movies, it had comedy elements.
Yeah.
But it didn't strike me as being.
What I'm getting, because he's done three or four that were actual horror movies.
Yeah.
And I think this one was. Maybe his first, and I think the best received.
Well, it is a horror movie. There's no question about that. It's presented as kind of a found footage kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more effective than the found footage stuff I've watched in the past. Like, Blair Witch, I saw in the theater, and I thought it was very effective, but the second time I saw it, not at all. Like once that novelty was gone, it really wasn't that great. And all the other found footage stuff I watched was never that great. Part of it for me, though, was I was always taken out of it when the film crew was doing things that it didn't seem like a film crew would do.
There's always a point where you're like, that's not. And I love that some found footage, the really shitty ones, just stop sometimes and you've got outside cameras.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, did you guys forget?
Well, and the first Cloverfield movie was like that.
Do that really?
Well, it didn't have outside cameras, but footage was constantly being shot that there's no way it would have been shot. But this one is kind of helped a little bit by the
that's why there's always one shitty character in every found footage movie, and it's the person that somebody says, this is really emotional, turn that off, and they say yeah, and then they don't do it.
Right.
No matter what kind of character they were before, they become an asshole right then because they choose to not do it.
This film benefits a little bit by the whole GoPro thing in that it does feel like what a couple would. All of it feels like something they would shoot. All of it does.
So am I going to get motion sick?
Maybe. Maybe, because some of it's pretty shaky. Because
I can't do Cloverfield or Blair Witch for that reason.
That's a good question. Now, the film was actually quite good in terms of the acting and how it was put together. There was one time in the beginning where one of the actors didn't seem like an actor. Most of the time that wasn't true. Most of the time everyone seemed very authentic. And there were two times where they used tropes for this kind of thing that it was really disappointing when it happened, because up to that point it was like, this is actually pretty good. And then they'd use some trope. And you know what they are, cause you were just talking about one and you're like, oh, why did you do that? You know what I mean? It's cause you guys were doing so well.
I don't ever watch found footage for verisimilitude.
Yeah.
Honestly, at this point, found footage for me is it's mostly bullshit as a film craft device. It can be an interesting narrative device, depending on how you do it. It can be very, even if the film is made poorly, it can be a very interesting narrative device on how you get your sources and what from and what order and things like that. And it's also usually indicative of a very low-budget amateur film, which can be hilarious.
One thing they didn't do is say something like, this footage was found in such and such a place.
They just
went into the film, and it was all footage that these people took. And I would say, overall, it was very well made. And I don't usually get creeped out by movies. I just sort of am fascinated by the craft of them or whatever. Yeah. But this sort of did freak me out a little bit. In certain scenes, I thought were very well put together. So, I don't know. We just saw it last night, and you know, we liked it okay. Those were the two big things that we watched. You know, fall TV's coming up, so we're really looking forward to that.
Yep.
I think we're going to try to. I was telling you this in email. You know, The Good Place is just on NBC. So why haven't we been keeping up with it when it airs? I don't know. Now, we're going to be recording a double podcast.
Next week.
Yeah. And that's when it comes back, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's the 26th.
So I'm on the road when it's on, so we'll have to watch it, like, online the next day.
But yeah, and we don't have TV anymore, but I'm pretty sure Hulu lets you watch the last, like, four episodes of things.
Yeah, right. So we'll probably.
If not, I'll fucking buy it on Amazon. Yeah, I'm not screwing around with that.
We're going to watch it. I don't know. Actually, now that I'm saying that, I don't know if we'll ever watch it, like, on TV, but we'll always watch it online maybe the next day.
Yeah, no, I'm desperate
keep,
for it.
And keep up with it. But that's what we're looking forward to. So how was your 2 weeks? Right.
I have things, but it's all going to be strongly mitigated by this. Did you watch Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance?
Yes.
All right. Whole thing?
Sorry, I forgot to mention that. Yes, well, the whole
okay,
thing.
Then I'm going to rush through my other shit so we can talk about this. I am not particularly writing lately because I am going to be restarting Becca James Lowenstein from the beginning.
Like blank slate restarting?
Basically. Or? I mean, I'm going to pull stuff from the other, but yeah. Huh. It's complete wrong tonal fit.
Mm.
I realized, and mostly it helped because I finished Color of Magic, the first Discworld book, and I'm like, this is supposed to be action comedy, and it's third person omniscient. And I was drawing it way. My inclination is so much to do first person that I was using the third person very sparingly and still doing a lot of showing through the dialogue and stuff like that.
Mm.
In a way that I'm like, it just draws everything out real slow. Mm. And just the tone in general. It sounds way too much like Odd Wings, which Odd Wings had funny bits in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not inherently a comedy per se.
Sure.
And this is very much supposed to be just pulpy adventure and laughs.
Right.
And I wasn't getting that at all. And so I need to restart. And I'm trying to get into that mindset. I'm a little worried that it will be difficult for me to write like that.
Because
it's not my inclination. But yeah, so I've been dragging my feet on that. I finished Color Magic, and I started The Dispossessed by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yeah.
You haven't read this?
No.
You should be ashamed of yourself for not having read this.
I haven't read any of her stuff, actually.
It's vintage science fiction specifically dealing with a completely anarchist society. How have you not read this?
I don't know.
It's like a book you would write.
Well... Yeah, I think I've heard that about it. But I just, I mean.
I'm very early into it because I just started a few days ago and I've only read a couple times. But I'm already just loving the, it is very direct. And some of this is old sci-fi style, but it's very direct. Like, everything is happening through a plot, but it is just. This is not like metaphoric or, you know, that we're discussing the political, and the whole thing is starting because I know there's a book about this anarchist, this moon off of this planet that lives a completely anarchist society.
Mm-hmm.
But the story right now is somebody who was born and raised on that planet,
mm-hmm.
a doctor from there, is being brought to this other world that lives closer to what we would think.
Sure.
And it's all basically him. What he's confused by and what he's interested by and the difficulty in having conversations and things and it's fascinating.
Sounds like when I came to Iowa City.
And it just, I love it for that, but I'm constantly like, why is William not reading this like, right now?
Well,
so read that book.
I know there are other books like that,
but that one is so dead on you. Like everything, seriously, it's, everything
know.
You love is an element of this book.
Well, at least so far. You haven't finished it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like old sci-fi. Like,
and
it has it has the plotting and feel like an Asimov or something
I know,
that.
Which I love,
I mean,
that stuff.
And no disrespect. It's definitely an Ursula Le Guin book. But I mean, there's a certain, you know, pre-1980 sci-fi feel when it was sort of a different thing.
Which I like.
Exactly.
I love that.
And it's talking about the realities of an anarchist situation. Like, you read this book.
Okay.
All right, but we're going to set that aside here. So, Dark Crystal.
Dark Crystal.
Age of Resistance.
Age of Resistance.
Prequel series to the Dark Crystal film.
Yes.
10 episodes.
Yes.
And then apparently a really interesting making of documentary that I have not watched.
Well, I haven't watched
it.
But
I have learned something about it. Yeah, it's called When the Crystal Calls, I think.
Oh,
and it's on
I
there.
Didn't see that.
The one fun fact I'm going to give for that right now is the original Dark Crystal film was made by Jim Henson and Brian Froud. Age of Resistance is made by Brian Froud, and I think his wife helps out a lot. And his son, Toby Froud, also very involved, one of the puppeteers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Toby Froud played Toby, the baby, in Labyrinth.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, just funny coincidence. Anyway, we watched the whole thing, and then last night we rewatched the original movie, or I did. Trish fell asleep. She was very tired last night, but I rewatched the original movie, which because I wanted to see like how does
sure,
this
yeah.
match up and whatever. And I highly recommend it. It's also on Netflix, so you can just do it.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Because we wanted to do the same
yes,
thing.
Yes, it's sitting on Netflix. It's weirdly it's free on Netflix right now and free on Amazon. I think on both, which is weird. But the HD one is on Netflix. So and also you're sitting right there because the other thing.
Yeah, we probably will watch it then.
All right.
Again.
Feelings.
Well, I always notice a little something missing from projects that Jim Henson worked on back in the day, and now other people are working on it. Maybe it's a bias or something. Maybe I've got some reason to see this. I don't know, but it did seem to lack a certain something. On the other hand, I did hear some criticisms about it before we watched it that I didn't agree with. I overall liked it.
I have not heard any criticisms of it.
It's
hugely popular.
Some people were they weren't as impressed with the puppeteering or the way the puppets were.
That is true. I did have one person who complained that the puppets looked like puppets. And I'm like, well, yeah.
Well, yeah, some people were saying that
you don't make puppetry that looks like an actual person.
Some people thought these puppets didn't look as good as the originals. And the flocking on the faces and things was a little bit different.
And this is interesting. They actually used a lot of CGI. I mean, there are some places in the show where you can tell they use CGI.
Sure.
For stuff that just would have been impossible. But they actually used a lot that you don't really notice in the Gelfling. But until go and watch the original, and you can tell. Because, like, the Gelfling, they're still very clearly puppets, but, like, they have expression and things.
Yeah.
And the original, Jen and Kira, just dead eyes.
Yeah.
Their face hardly ever moves in relation to anything.
I was pretty impressed with it, actually. I was impressed with the puppeteering. I was impressed. The main characters, especially, were done really well. However that was achieved, if they used some post-production stuff to do that. Some people didn't like... One of the criticisms I heard ahead of time was that they didn't like the focus... on the Skeksis and all that stuff and how they interacted, and a lot of interactions between them. I didn't have a problem with that. I don't know. I just thought that it was pretty good. I mean, we watched the whole thing without it seeming like a chore or anything. We were looked forward to watching the next one. It's not... If someone would have pitched it to me and said, well, we want to make this kind of prequel series to The Dark Crystal, I don't think I would have been in favor. Because, again, I often find projects that are extensions of what Jim Henson did not quite as good, and I wouldn't have seen the point or whatever. But I thought this was pretty good. I thought it looked great. And, I think anybody who liked the original would probably like this. I think they would. So I would definitely recommend it. But, you know, that was my opinion. What about you?
I'm of two minds. I very much like the original.
Yeah, I do too.
As a child, I liked it. As an adult, I like it. Watching it the other night, I liked it. Visually, the show is wonderful and is worth watching just for that.
Agreed. Yeah, very nice.
The production values are... there are things in the original they did a little better. There's mostly things in this that are better than the original. But there are a few places where I'm like, I like how they handled that a little better.
In the original.
Original has a lot of long tracking shots of just the world with no conversation or anything, and there was not time for that in this.
No.
And I did kind of miss that because it was pretty cool in here. But, so visually it's absolutely worth it. I find the story very problematic and mediocre.
Well,
like, badly.
It certainly doesn't have the narrative punch of the original.
Well,
in my opinion.
I think the problem is...
But it was still fun, I thought.
The original is just a myth. It's a fairy tale.
Yeah.
It's a very simple story
mm-hmm.
with good and evil and a hero's journey. And it's very straightforward.
And elegant,
and
I think.
And it has to be.
Yeah.
Because these are not deep characters.
Right. It's going to just be in a film, so
yes.
You have to really...
And the TV show goes for nuance, and it failed. When you take the fairy tale that is The Dark Crystal and stretch it out, the little slivers of plot hole and things that don't make sense get really big.
No, and you mentioned this before when you were talking about watching initial things. You said that the way morality is handled in the movie, it that might not fit with how the show works.
And it super doesn't.
And you're right, it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't.
And it's, and like, I hate almost everyone, especially the Gelflings.
Well, I don't know.
It gets better.
Yeah.
About the time we meet Heretic and Wanderer, we got to where we were into it and looking forward to the next episode. Up to that point, though, we were a little bit pulling ourselves through it.
Huh.
But like, I mean, love Deet. You can't not love Deet. In fact, I'm almost annoyed at Deet because she's so built to be loved, but I love her. Mm. Love Hup.
Well, the puppeteer-
wasn't sure I was going to love Hup, but I love Hup.
Puppeteering for Deet was so good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe that was one of the things
like,
that helped me watch it, was I liked the puppeteering was actually quite good.
Celadon and Bria, I can't stand. Celadon, I don't understand. There's a character in this who, when everybody's going in one direction, takes a hard left, and you're like, they're going to become a bad guy. And then you're like, I know how this works. They're either going to become a bad guy, or they're going to get this wonderful redemptive arc. Neither of those things happened. And we just fucking pretended like something had changed, and then we just changed. Like, it was so badly done. Between Rian and Bria, we didn't need one of them. I don't care which one, but they could have been one character very easily. In fact, I'm a little annoyed at Rian because it just seems like we needed a dude to hold the sword, which was just annoying as shit.
I mean, I suppose. These are all valid criticisms for sure.
And it's just, honestly, the Skeksis stuff I found the most fascinating because I found their setup more interesting. But the world just doesn't make sense, and you spend enough time in it that you can tell it doesn't make sense, whereas in the movie you don't spend enough time. But it's still compelling, and in fact we watched the movie and we're working really hard now on trying to figure out exactly when in time they relate to each other, because I was very confused originally and thought Age of Resistance was 1,000 years before the movie, but now it's like, no, they're quite close. Like, I'm guessing it's less than 20 years in between. And possibly less than that. But the problem is it's really hard to tell. It's like Star Wars. It's like Return of the Jedi, and then there's like 17 years until The Force Awakens. But like everybody has forgotten all of the most famous people from Return of the Jedi and doesn't think like the Force is real anymore and shit like that. Like, it was a state religion that performed miracles and terrors all the time on the regular, and 17 years go by, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, that shit was made up. Like, no, that doesn't, no. And it's the same kind of thing here. Like, some of the stuff I'm like, oh, so the series just happened recently, and then other stuff I'm like, what? It's a legend? And you didn't think it was, like, there's a prophecy, the movie is very focused on a prophecy that doesn't exist in the TV show and that existed so much in the movie that it was written into stone on some ruins. I'm like, when the hell did that happen?
Well,
Jen is dumb as hell.
I mean, all the...
Watch the movie again, you'll see. Jen is incredibly stupid. Jen spends a lot of the movie talking to himself, asking himself questions that he was directly told by his master before he died. He goes to get the shard, and he's like, what's so important about it? What am I supposed to do with it? And then eventually has a realization, oh, it's part of the dark crystal. I'm supposed to heal the crystal. I'm like, the dude, first thing he told you was you have to find the shard as part of the dark crystal and go heal the crystal. Literally first thing he said.
I mean, all of the things you say about the TV show are true, and none of them particularly bother me. You know what?
And that's frequently the case when you like something and I don't.
Well, it probably has to do with expectations also, because honestly, my expectations for it artistically were not that high.
I think because people were talking it up so much in reviews and stuff that mine were higher. But also, it's just, I mean, it's... This is a thing that bugs me, you know? I'm concerned with character sympathy and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. If you're going into this going, like, it was such a gorgeous movie, I want a TV show of that... It's there. It's gorgeous. It's amazing. And it puts in a lot of mythology that I am still picking apart in my brain that is interesting to me. It was fascinating to go back and see what they retconned and what they didn't. And some of it, you're like, oh, I see why they retconned. Other stuff, I'm like, did you not watch the movie again before? Because you changed that just a little bit for, like, no reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm always sort of surprised when prequels and sequels do that. I'm like, why did you... Did you not? I would watch the source material immediately, first thing when I'm going to create.
Right, and try to be like, faithful to it so people aren't.
Yeah, and
really
it's, that was weird. Hell of a voice cast, mostly the Skeksis.
Yeah, I agree.
Skeksis were insane, and I finally had to look them up because too many of them sounded familiar, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, it really is Harvey Fierstein, because I was like, it sounds like Harvey Fierstein. Fucking Mark Hamill, Benedict Wong, Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
Just a ton. Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, yep. Did a fantastic job.
And they do some great through lines. Augra in the movie is the funny one. Augra in the TV show is absolutely the funny one. She has far and away the best lines in the show. Absolutely and totally. The scheming nature of the Chamberlain in the movie really plays out in the TV show. It's one of the more fascinating aspects to me. He plays the long game in his manipulations like the others don't. And it makes more sense because in the movie, you're like, this guy is a wuss and he's really annoying. How is he important?
Yeah.
And now you see why, because he is such a great manipulator and they do that really well.
Mm-hmm.
It also gets like the old days, and that's one of the things. Dark Crystal is a children's movie, and I loved it as a child. It's also one of the scariest damn children's movies I encountered.
Yeah, it really is.
The TV show is fucking dark at times, and actually one of the funniest lines and one of the darkest scenes are the same scene. I was watching, I was like, oh my god, are they really doing this? And then Augra said something hilarious, like right at the same time. There is a scene where you get, I mean, it's a classic trope-filled thing, but again, this is a TV show, ostensibly a kids thing. You see a silhouette of somebody bludgeoning someone else to death, and then you see a fuzzy little creature in a cave getting splattered with the blood.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was pretty hardcore stuff sometimes.
But, yeah, I mean, like, all of this is overshadowed by the fact that I'm like, it's worth seeing for the visuals alone.
It was very well crafted. I mean, and again, I think my expectations for the puppeteering were actually pretty low, and I was super impressed with how it looked.
The production value is really impressive.
Yeah, and I guess
and a lot of good mixing. Like I said, there's a couple times that are clearly CG, but a lot of it is just very subtly done and nicely done.
There were lots of times where my wife and I were like, well, that's not quite right. I mean, from the movie, right? Comparing it to the film. But then something spectacular, visually spectacular, or they would do something with a character in the puppeteering that was like, that really worked. That was amazing. And I just was so impressed with that stuff.
Very interesting change in the TV show that I think actually maybe the movie did better. The movie used actual people from far away way more often.
Oh, yes, they absolutely did, right.
And that got they didn't seem to do that in the TV show. And frequently in a situation where Gelfling was running, it would sometimes look awkward.
Yeah, right.
But again, I'm like, it's puppets. Like, I'm already suspending my disbelief here. It was not that rough for me. And there's very interesting stuff. Lore is not CGI. And what he actually is three puppeteers in skin suits that got blue screened out.
Yeah, that kind of thing actually was done on the original movie also.
Because that was amazing to me, because they do some really cool stuff with that. But yeah, just the story itself, it's got some big problems.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I just was so impressed. Again, low expectations, I think.
Yeah, well, we're seeing. This is a weird one. I really like the music from the film. Really surprised they didn't really use it on the TV show. And I think they didn't come up with better music.
No, I agree with that.
I thought that music would... And, like, near the end of the last episode, they did some refrain of something. But I'm like, oh, that music was some of my favorite stuff in it. And I'm like, why didn't they use that? It was sitting there.
That was one of the things my wife and I talked about, too, in many of the episodes, was... They don't seem to be making use of music in the TV show like they did in the film.
Yeah.
We didn't quite know why that was.
They would have little breaks.
Sure.
We would have little singing breaks. And I really liked when the Gelfling sang. That was fun. But side note. I feel like we're getting really fucking racist with the podlings. This, Hup notwithstanding, love Hup, the TV show was very not good to podlings.
Yeah.
The TV show convinced us podlings do nothing but party, and they have absolutely zero sense of hygiene. And I'm like, this is unfair.
Unless they're slaves and they make them behave.
Right,
yeah, yep.
But also, like, when they're partying in their houses with barrels of ale. And I'm like, who made this stuff? Somebody made it. Like, when we get the lesser service scene and we're trying to bathe them, I'm like, this feels like a goddamn podling minstrel show. Like, this is... I'm offended on behalf of a fictional race here. Like, this is inappropriate.
Yeah, that was just weird to me. I wasn't sure I quite even.
And then later we
that.
Had the podling. And don't get me wrong, the podling party in the original is fun. I watched it again, and it's pretty hilarious. But like, you aren't led to believe that's the sum total of what they do with their lives. And this one, I'm like, that's not right.
Unless they're civilized by their betters, and then they're servants that are very loyal servants. It seems like.
Mm. No, Agra got to be hilarious.
She got a lot of the best lines. I recommend it. I it's going to be one of those things that, again, I do think you'll like it if you liked the original, although you may have some of the issues that you had.
But I still liked it. I'm so glad I watched it.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's given me bunches to think about, and I'm really torn in deciding if I want them to have another season of it. Because the problem is... Well, I don't know. I'm still wondering if they won't go alternate timeline like Gotham did.
Well, I want
I'm wondering if they do it differently. And if they don't do it differently, then the next season can just be watching genocide.
Well, now that I've seen... Yeah. Now that I've seen what they're doing, I am curious to see what else they can do or if they can improve on some things. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't always that seamless between the puppets and the CGI. I'd like to see them do better at that. I'd like to see them learn from some of the errors that they made from a craft perspective. I don't know if they can fix the story issues, but I'm just curious to see if they can get better.
Yeah.
Because I was really impressed with what they achieved technically. And, you know, and again, so I've done puppeteering myself. So, you know, this is, I was maybe enjoying it on that level too, as someone who knows a little bit about what the technical challenges are going to be here. And how well they seemed to solve them. And I think I was also impressed that, again, all the stuff I've seen from Jim Henson's people since he passed always seems to be lacking something. This did too, but it also did more than I've seen before. The only other Henson property I've ever been impressed with after Jim Henson died was Farscape.
Yeah.
And in terms of its technical achievement, and also in terms of it having a certain spirit to it, I guess, I thought, okay, yeah, you're getting there. And so yeah. I think I would like to see another season and see if they can just push it a little bit further and make something really impressive.
I'd watch it. I think the whole thing's very Lucas-y is what it gets to. Mm. I feel like they're focused on the visual and they're maybe not so good on the, this is the thing. When visual effects artists become filmmakers, I'm like,
right. And
different skill set. And you again, aren't necessarily going
to
translate.
One of the reasons if they pitched this to me ahead of time, I probably would have said no, is we don't need it. No. And I would have said, what I would have argued was, you're only going to make this story weaker.
But apparently we've already been building it. Because in addition to, I knew there was some manga related to it and stuff like that.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
There's apparently a series of young adult novels set in Thra.
Didn't know that either.
Me neither. I learned this recently from when it was going to come up. I was researching stuff.
Mm.
And that's why I actually learned a lot more of the lore that I was annoyed they contradicted some of that. And
well, again, like I again, that speaks to the point I just made, that you're only going to make this weaker by trying to flesh it out.
Which is almost always the case, but
But
it is a very interesting world idea, and so the urge to flesh it out makes sense. But it's one of those that, yeah, it gets weaker as it goes.
Well, and I like they made a real good effort in each scene to really try to fill the scene with good practical, you know, puppeteering effects and things, and I liked that. So, I don't know.
And good acting. I mean,
the voice acting was very good.
And the puppet acting. Just everybody's acting.
Yeah, and the puppet acting.
It just is a story that I'm like, it doesn't...
It was impressive as a piece of craft. It really was. But, yeah, I all your criticisms are totally valid. You're right. Absolutely right.
But, yeah, you should watch it and see if you can guess the stars, because I was just constantly I'm like, wait, is that... And then Trisha would be like, is that... Like, I didn't catch Eddie Izzard, and she did. Yeah, and I looked... I'm like, no, it's not. And I looked it up. I'm like, it is him.
Yeah.
There just were a ton of stars in it.
And I'd be curious what people thought if they watched it, you know.
Tell us on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, what you thought of Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. If you haven't watched it yet, get with the cool people and watch it. Also, apparently Fizzgig is not the name of that little puffball. It's the name of the entire species. Also, we had a lot of fun watching the movie again and trying to figure out which clans, from a genetic perspective, Jen and Kira came from. We decided on Stonewood and Vaprin, which makes sense because they're the pretty clans.
I really like Deet, but I couldn't... Every time they said Deet, said her name, I thought of...
You thought of the insecticide?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the same thing.
I did every single time. It's like, this is terrible. Why did you name her that? Whatever.
Yeah, I wanted to not like Deet because I feel like they pushed so hard. Like, she was so ridiculously nice.
Right, but
when she's like apologizing to the Arathim, I'm like, come on!
It
worked.
It
eventually
was some of the best puppeteering on that character.
And she had an arc that is fascinating, and she had an arc that is the biggest reason to want to watch a second season to see what happens out of that.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
And yeah, and she was the coolest looking puppet. Like, the Grottans in general looked very cool.
Well, and whoever was manipulating hers did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And like you said, if they did any post-production stuff, it was totally effective, too.
Yeah. All right.
Really impressive.
Draw a hat thing. If you'd like to write into the hat, email themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com with your little information thing there. Please do it.
I really did like the part, though, where they found... what were they called? You said their names a second ago. The two that were living together and told the story.
Heretic and Wanderer.
Yes.
That was, well, and that was apparently some YouTuber who did the puppet show within a puppet show. But yes, we had a puppet show within a puppet show, which was awesome.
So good.
Also, for some reason, after Hupp moved there and stopped wearing his hat, he had the best hair after that. whatever product they were giving him to bathe with was doing wonders for his hair.
Those were great scenes, though. That's another good reason to watch the series just for those things.
We changed around where we didn't need Rian, and we just had Hupp, and we had the dual spoon.
The dual spoon.
Instead of the dual glaive. I thought that'd be good.
Gentle persons. This is from Azure Talon, by the way.
All right.
I've given Blood Sparrow enough time, and she's let me down. So it's up to me. What are your greatest regrets and failures in life? Azure, I might wind up legitimately feeling bad for this callback bit talent. I don't even understand what he's talking about. I know who Blood Sparrow is, obviously.
I feel like Blood Sparrow asked this question a long time ago.
I mean, we've been asked this question before.
Yeah, I think it might have been by Blood Sparrow. It's kind of a bummer question, yeah. There's some very practical ones. I regret having not taken better care of my body when I was younger. I regret not having a regular exercise routine in college. That kind of thing. I could be in really good shape now if I had started back then. That kind of thing. But when it comes to like life decisions, I've said before, there are some serious ones that I won't ever talk about on here. But everything brought me to where I am, and I like where I am.
It's difficult. I mean, there's a lot of things I regret, and like you, most of them are not anything I'd ever talk about on a podcast. I might talk to you about them privately, and I probably have, actually.
Sorry, as these claws are digging into my leg again. You're adorable. But
regrets are one thing. Failures are another. Because failures are not necessarily something you regret, right? I mean, you tried to do something. It didn't work out. And you probably are glad you tried. You know what I mean?
Well, and you eventually run into paradox. Because, like, there's things in my life that cause me a great deal of sadness and trauma. If knowing that happened, I could stop myself from experiencing those, would I? Well, yes, except then I wouldn't be the person I am who knows that did those. And I don't know how that would then change me as a person for not having gone through it.
Right.
I knew people in my younger days who were like, I live without regrets. And I always thought that was the dumbest thing in the world. And I kind of am like that now, though. I kind of don't have regrets. And I mean, I do. And that, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that.
Well,
or whatever.
My regrets are
But not ones that are like, oh, I wish I could go back
change
that.
My regrets are all in relation to something I did that had an impact on somebody else.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, those aren't the kinds of things I look at and say, oh, but I'm who I am because of that. No, I didn't have to do that. That person didn't have to suffer for my actions for me to be who I am. That was completely inexcusable, and I regret that. But in terms of like, directions I took in my life and stuff like that. I mean, I often look back at college and think, well, I should have done this, that, or the other thing. But then there are other things where I think to myself, now, if I had done that, this is where I'd be right now. Would I really be happy there? And usually the answer is no.
Yeah.
It's like, that's probably a good thing I didn't take that route. And not just that, but even if I say, yes, I should have taken that route and I would be happier there, when I really think about why I didn't, I realize I didn't have any of the knowledge I needed to make that decision.
Yeah.
Or any of the help I needed to make that decision. So I can't really hold it against me.
And that's where a lot of this goes.
Doing that.
Trish and I do this a lot because we've broken into being old people and complaining about the kids and things like that.
Yeah.
And what it all comes down to is when I was that age, if I had learned all the lessons that I have learned since, like, it would have been awesome. Like, if I was in high school knowing all the things I have learned now into my 40s, like, so much high school trauma would not have happened to me or to my friends. I could have freaking ruled that school. Like so many, like, knowing now how dumb it is and how easily manipulated it is and all this other stuff, like, it would just be a totally different story now. So many of the problems that you see, like, adolescents having that you're like, I know how to fix those and it's really easy, but you don't know. And you're at a point where I could tell you and you won't believe me and like that kind of thing. And there's lots of, like, there's dumb shit I've done in my relationship now that I'm like, I mean, we've been together for enough years that I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not the same person that I was when we first met.
Right.
And I've learned a lot of lessons that would have prevented me from doing that dumb shit back then. But, I mean, that's always going to be true, and it's a silly...
That's exactly right.
It's a silly question, because then it ceases to be what do you regret in your life, and more, what would you do if you had time travel?
Right. Well, and everybody is ignorant of something.
Yeah.
And that ignorance always screws them over somehow. I mean, you can't... No matter how smart you are when you're, say, a teenager or whatever, maybe you'll avoid some of the things that other people don't avoid, but you're just going to fall into a whole different set of traps.
Yeah, and all indications are that it doesn't get any better.
Right.
I have yet to hear of people in their 90s and their hundreds talking about how stupid people in their 80s are, but that's about it. Like, everything else. Like, according to people I know in their 60s and 70s, I'm still doing stupid shit that'll be really obvious in a couple decades to me.
But, yeah, I mean... Again, the things I regret, and this has always been true, even when I was young, the stuff I regretted were things I did that had an adverse impact on other people, and there's no reason or excuse for that. And I'm always going to regret those things, and I think I should always regret them.
You should. You should be aware that going through that, I mean, it did still impact who you are today, but I think it's fair to say, you know what, I'm willing to give up whatever personal growth I got. For them not to suffer.
Well, but
which I think is totally understandable
statement. The other side of that is you can somewhat make up for it by learning a lesson from it and not doing that kind of stupid thing again. But failure, I mean, there are things that I've endeavored to do that I failed at. But I still would have endeavored to do them. Maybe there are things I would have done differently, but mostly when I look back, it's like I didn't know to do that differently.
Yeah.
So
there are some things that I failed at that I'm like, I had no business doing that.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't. And
that's
it's not
true. I do have that.
But
sometimes.
It's not a huge thing. It's like, oh man, it's so terrible. I did. It's mostly just like, that could have saved me a year or two.
Yeah.
Not taking archery lessons or whatever. Yeah, like that's just. But it's not a huge thing. It's just like.
Right.
Yeah,
right. No, I have some of those too.
Several inner arm welts I'll never get back or whatever.
But I mean, I've always had a particular perspective on things like failure, which is. You've got to try things, you know, and you're not always going to succeed. So you really can't get too bent out of shape about something failing. And I guess that's why the only regrets I have are in relation to things that happen to other people, because to me, those are the only quote unquote bad things. You know, we've talked about good and bad and whether good and evil really exist and stuff. The closest thing I can get to bad or evil is, you know, when someone acts in a coercive or tyrannical way towards someone else. And if I've ever done that in my past, or I've done something that could be perceived that way, I'm going to regret that. But anything outside of that, even if it doesn't work out for me, or if it doesn't work out the way I planned, I can't think of that as a bad thing.
Well,
it's just a thing that happened.
And even within that, it's tricky because, and I'm not saying this is the case all the time or anything, but people learn things from trauma. And
well,
so if you were bad or tyrannical, it may have helped them grow in a way that they think is worth it now. Again, moot point, because they can't go back and change it either. Right. But I mean, and I understand still regretting that. But again, it all just still becomes these weird thought experiments and isn't really like, well, given this, now I should.
Well, and you have to get on with it. I mean, you can't wallow in these things.
Well, I think that's the perspective. Don't think of them as regrets. Think of them as lessons.
Sure, sure.
What have you learned from this stuff? And then you do that going forward, because forward's the only option.
Right. But I think you and I have probably our whole lives, I mean, I don't want to say anything for you that's not true, but I think it's true, have been kind of performers in some way. And when you're a performer, you have to take risks. And if you put yourself out there and you die, you have to have some mechanism to say, okay, well, that didn't work, but then be able to get back out there. So I think people who do work in some type of performance, I think they, if they're going to continue that for the rest of their lives, they've got to learn how to be okay with abject humiliation and just go ahead and try it again, you know, tomorrow if you can.
During my workout this morning, I was listening to a playlist. I recently have discovered I am shit at making workout playlists. I got to fix this. But I happened to be listening to the one song that actually was good on there, which was the one from Zootopia that Shakira did called Try Everything. And this is all in there talking about all this kind of stuff. birds don't just fly. They fall down and get up, and nobody learns without getting it wrong. And all, like, just going through my head right now. We're out of time, people, so go away. Go to the blog, though, and tell us what you think about Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. Also, the original movie, and if you haven't, then seen them. And what do you regret about Azure Talon's asking this question? And William, go read The Dispossessed right now.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.